This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 909 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine and Lebanon. Israel continues to shoot, attack, drone strike, and bomb Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, while maintaining a severe blockade on essential food, medicine, medical supplies, fuel, and materials for infrastructure repair. On Tuesday, March 31st, reporter Ibrahim Kanan captured footage of a Palestinian child who was injured in a bombing that targeted a group of Palestinians in the Bayouk area of Khan Yunis. Kanan stated that one man was killed along with his baby and others were injured. The local Wafa news agency reported that another Palestinian was killed and others were injured in a separate attack in Jabalia in northern Gaza, also on Tuesday, and two others were injured by Israeli gunfire east of the Bureij refugee camp in central Gaza. Israeli forces once again targeted Palestinian police checkpoints this week. Six Palestinians, including a young girl and three police officers, were killed in two separate Israeli strikes on police personnel on March 29th in the Mawasi area west of Khan Yunis. Over the past 3 weeks, Israel has routinely targeted Palestinian police officers in an effort to disrupt social order. Reporter Ibrahim Kanan said that the attack occurred along with artillery shelling and gunfire along the eastern areas of Khan Yunis city in the southern Gaza Strip. Two brothers were killed in an Israeli airstrike in the Shujaiya neighborhood of eastern Gaza city on March 28th while they were directly confronting militias supported by Israel in defense of their home and their community. Journalist Ibrahim Bedouin accompanied a massive funeral march after Saad and Fahmi Kadoum were killed while foiling an incursion by the Israeli-aligned militias. The two brothers engaged the armed group in clashes, inflicting losses, before the Israeli occupation army sent a swarm of quadcopter drones and a warplane, which directly targeted them and killed them. According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza, more than 710 Palestinians have been killed and more than 1,900 have been wounded since the so-called ceasefire began in October 2025. The Rafah crossing at the Gaza-Egypt border was partially reopened 2 weeks ago for a very limited number of Palestinians leaving for medical treatment and the return of those who sought treatment abroad during the last 2.5 years of Israel's genocide. This week, a group of small children who had been medically evacuated to Egypt in November 2023, most of them who were premature infants in incubators, were returned to their families after Israel cut the power to hospitals and then started bombing medical facilities during the first few months of the genocide. 29 babies were transferred from the neonatal intensive care unit at Al-Shifa Hospital to other hospitals in Gaza before being evacuated. 4 of the babies in critical condition of the group died. And notably, of course, Israel prevented the parents from accompanying their fragile newborns. These mothers and fathers had not seen their children since November 2023. Dr. Munir Al-Bursh, the director of the Ministry of Health in Gaza, recalled on social media the story of what the infants were put through. He stated, quote, "Few know the story of the premature infants while we were besieged inside Al-Shifa Medical Complex. When fuel was cut off, incubators fell silent, and the smallest lives began fading before our eyes, one after another. They were unbearable moments, babies struggling to breathe, without machines, without warmth, without enough life to hold on to. We called upon the world, save those who remain before it is too late. We carried them through hospital corridors, searching for any chance of survival, in scenes broadcast live and documented by international organizations, yet the world was too late. In the end, those who survived were transferred to Egypt for treatment, carrying the pain of their beginnings and the hope of survival. Today, life returns," he added. In a follow-up post, Dr. Al-Bursh said that doctors and healthcare workers, quote, paid a steep price to never abandon them and stayed with them until the very last moment. And today they have returned alive to their mother's embraces to declare to the world that the will to live is stronger than the will to kill, and that Gaza, despite the pain, forges glory and inscribes victory by the grace of God. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Civil Defense and the Ministry of Health in Gaza stated this week that the electricity and fuel crisis due to Israel's ongoing blockade is threatening to shut down health and emergency services if a sufficient amount of fuel is not delivered immediately. On March 31st, the Civil Defense issued an urgent appeal to pressure the Israelis to allow in fuel for critical rescue and repair operations. Journalist Ibrahim Badouan showed the result of the deepening shortage of fuel and spare parts that is threatening hospital generators and is pushing the healthcare system toward collapse amid ongoing power outages. The Civil Defense stated that with the limited amount of fuel that they have received, which they estimate covers only about 15% of their monthly requirements, the humanitarian crisis is becoming exacerbated across Gaza. The rescue workers warned that the Israeli occupation authorities are deliberately employing a drip-feed policy regarding the entry of fuel into the Gaza Strip, a tactic that negatively impacts humanitarian intervention efforts and intensifies the suffering of the civilian population. Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces shot and killed a 15-year-old child in the Dehesha refugee camp south of Bethlehem on March 27th. According to Defense for Children International Palestine, Adam Syed Salah Beit Dahman, 15 years old, was shot in the pelvis by Israeli forces around 9 p.m. at the entrance to Dehesha. Four Israeli military vehicles arrived at the camp's entrance 30 minutes prior to the shooting, and young Palestinian men and boys threw stones toward the heavily armored vehicles in response. Soldiers disembarked from their armored vehicles and opened fire from about 200 meters away, striking Adam. After shooting Adam, Israeli forces surrounded him while beating him and shouting at him. Israeli soldiers prevented Palestine Red Crescent Society paramedics from reaching the child for about 30 minutes, Defense for Children International Palestine stated. Israeli forces eventually allowed one paramedic to reach Adam. An ambulance brought him to Beit Jala Governmental Hospital, where he was pronounced dead at 10:30 p.m. Adam's mother carried her son's body through the camp during his funeral on March 28th. Reporter Hisham Abu Shakra captured this clip. Israeli forces have killed 8 Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank in 2026, according to documentation collected by DCIP. Israeli forces and settlers killed 56 Palestinian children in the West Bank in 2025. Jewish Israeli settlers attacked a group of Palestinians on Tuesday in the town of Taisir in the northern West Bank, injuring at least 3. Eyewitnesses told the Anadolu news agency that the settlers attacked Palestinians on their land on the outskirts of the town, assaulting them with stones and sticks. The Israelis set fire to a tractor and other Palestinian property in the town, they added. After decades of Israel's de facto policy of killing Palestinians by torture, starvation, or denial of medical treatment inside prisons and detention camps, the Israeli parliament codified the policy into law this week, passing a measure that allows the execution of Palestinians by hanging, carried out by prison guards appointed by the Israeli prison service, with the identities of the executors kept secret and granted legal immunity. The law enjoys broad support from the Israeli public, notes human rights group B'Tselem. The Palestinian civil rights group Adala states that the law establishes, quote, clear racial separation, applying it exclusively to the Palestinian population of the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem, and excluding the Israeli Jewish population. Adala submitted a petition against the law just half an hour after the Israeli parliament passed it, according to the center's director, Hassan Jabarin. The law is racist, Jabarin told the Anadolu news agency. While many countries apply the death penalty, the statute is the only law in the world that discriminates between defendants based on ethnicity, he added. Israel's national security minister, extremist, settler, and war crimes suspect Itamar Ben-Gvir, a leading proponent of the measure who has been wearing a noose pin on his lapel in support, celebrated the passage of the law by opening up a bottle of champagne and toasting to the prospect of killing more Palestinians with his fellow lawmakers. More than 9,500 Palestinians are held in Israeli prisons, including 350 children and 73 women who are subjected to systematic torture, starvation, and medical neglect, practices that have escalated since the genocide began in October 2023. A general strike was announced across the occupied West Bank in protest of the execution law as Palestinians in Gaza protested in the streets. Reporter Mohammed Abu Salama captured video of crowds of demonstrators in Gaza holding signs against the law and burning photos of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. A spokesperson for the tribes and popular committees in Burej refugee camp in Gaza told the Anadolu news agency that the protest aimed, quote, to send a clear message to the occupation that the prisoners are not alone. Adopting such laws reflects confusion and failure, he said, stressing that tribal leaders declare that, quote, any harm to our prisoners will be met with an unexpected popular and national response. He emphasized that Palestinians stand united behind the prisoners' cause. Meanwhile, in Lebanon, at least 50 people were killed and nearly 200 were wounded between Tuesday and Wednesday alone, according to the Lebanese Health Ministry. Since the Israeli attacks escalated on March 2nd, more than 1,300 Lebanese have been killed and nearly 4,000 have been wounded. In the south, Israel killed three journalists on March 28th while they were covering the Israeli invasion and attacks. Fatima Fatouni, a reporter for Al Mayadeen, was killed along with her brother, Mohammed, a video journalist, and Ali Shweib, a longtime correspondent with Al Manar TV. Their vehicle was clearly marked press, and Fatima Fatouni had just ended her live broadcast right before the airstrike killed her. In an attempt to supposedly justify the killing, Israeli forces claimed that Shweib was a member of Hezbollah's Radwan forces, a special operations arm of the military, echoing a tactic that Israel has used to justify the targeted murders of hundreds of Palestinian journalists in Gaza over the last 2.5 years of genocide. The military claimed that he worked to expose the locations of Israeli army troops operating in southern Lebanon in their invasion and occupation there, and that he engaged in incitement against Israeli troops, reports the publication Truthout. However, the only evidence the military offered was a photo of Shweib, a well-known war reporter who has covered the region for decades in supposed military garb. When a Fox News correspondent asked the Israeli military about the source of the photo, the military admitted that it was fake. Unfortunately, there isn't really a picture of it. It was photoshopped, the Israeli military said in a statement. In a post mourning their colleague Fatima Fatouni, Al Mayadeen says that it was not the first time that one of their correspondents had been targeted by Israel. Quote, soon after Israel began its war on Lebanon, Al Mayadeen's correspondent Farah Omar and cameraman Rabih Memari were martyred in an Israeli aggression on November 21, 2023. Al Mayadeen's Ghassan Najjar and Mohammed Reda were also martyred in another Israeli attack on journalists on October 25, 2024. This is part of Israel's systematic attacks on journalists, Al Mayadeen added. Quote, in the past 3 years, Israel has killed hundreds of journalists across the region, all in an attempt to prevent the broadcasting of the reality of its crimes. For more on the situation in Lebanon over the past few days, our contributor Rokaya Chamsidine filed this report for the Electronic Intifada on Wednesday evening.
Last week, Israeli forces have significantly escalated their military offensive against Lebanon, once again striking deep into residential neighborhoods and rural communities. Air raids and attacks from Israeli warships have targeted Beirut's southern suburb, also known as Dahiya, resulting in significant casualties. In southern Lebanon, the intensity of strikes continues unabated. Villages including Khiam, Jibshit, Kafra, Bint Jbin, and Tibnin, among others, have been hit repeatedly by Israeli bombardment. Homes, shops, and community centers have been damaged or completely destroyed, and dozens have been killed or wounded. Israel is also continuing with its pattern of attacking medical personnel, including by way of double-tap strikes. To date, Israel has killed 1,318 people and injured 3,935 people in Lebanon since the 2nd of March. Among those killed are more than 55 first responders. Arguably, the most harrowing loss have been the deaths of journalists Hajj Ali Shaib of Al Manar and Al Mayadeen Fatma Ftouneh, along with her brother, photojournalist Mohammed Ftouneh, who were killed when their clearly marked press vehicle was struck by at least four Israeli missiles while they were covering the situation in South Lebanon near the village of Jizin. In reaction to these sustained assaults, Hezbollah has intensified resistance operations against Israeli military positions, conducting coordinated rocket barrages and precision strikes. Armed resistance units have targeted Israeli armored columns and outposts along the border regions, engaging occupation forces with guided missiles and unmanned aerial strikes designed to disrupt troop concentrations and logistical lines. Hezbollah has also targeted over 120 Israeli tanks and military machinery and have been facing Israeli soldiers from point-blank range. These operations, which have resulted in an unknown number of dead Israeli occupation soldiers, are part of a broader strategy of active defense, resisting any attempt by Israeli forces to advance into southern Lebanon and asserting our people's right to defend Lebanese territory in the face of foreign aggression. Southern villages near the border have seen repeated Israeli announcements of the intention to bomb our communities, but many residents refuse to abandon their homes and land, choosing instead to stand firm despite the bombardment. Hezbollah has made it clear that resistance operations will continue as long as Israeli attacks on Lebanese civilians and sovereign territory persist. Hezbollah's leadership has reiterated that actions taken are in direct response to the occupation's military operations against the people of Lebanon. Each new day in Lebanon brings fresh reports of an attack on a village and neighborhood and of families mourning loved ones, but also of resistance and of Hezbollah units engaging in defensive operations along the front lines. The struggle continues with intensity driven by a determination to protect our land, our people, and the right to self-defense against Israeli aggression. The people of Dahiya, South Lebanon, and the Ba'a Valley are still here, and they continue to resist.
That was Rokaya Chamsidine reporting for the Electronic Intifada from Lebanon on Wednesday. We've published many features in the last week, but we wanted to highlight A Genocide Here, An Amputation There by Ahmed Dremli and Huda Skeik, writing from Gaza, with photography by Omar Ashtawi and Mu'tasim Al-Bitar. The reporters profile several Palestinians in this moving feature who are trying to cope with amputations and other injuries after surviving Israeli attacks during the genocide. One of the stories they follow is that of Omar Halawa, 13 years old, who lives with his family in a displacement camp after their home in the Jabalia refugee camp was destroyed in an Israeli airstrike in January 2024. The reporters write, quote, "On October 1st, 2025, Omar and two of his cousins were waiting for a charity water truck near their tent on Gaza City's beach. At around 8 a.m., Israeli shells began to strike in the area of the water queue, two shells landing near Omar. Omar's parents, Yasmin and Adnan, heard the explosions from inside their tent, followed by shrapnel hitting nearby. Adnan rushed outside when, moments later, three young men ran toward their tent, asking if they were Omar's parents. They told us he was injured in his leg and had been taken to the hospital, Yasmin, 37, told the Electronic Intifada. I screamed and his father kept slapping his face, unable to believe what he was hearing. Yasmin ran barefoot nearly 3 kilometers toward Al-Shifa Hospital and then to the nearby patient's friend's Benevolent Society Hospital, but didn't find Omar in either. Doctors at the patient's friend's hospital told Yasmin he might have been transferred to the Palestine Red Crescent Society Field Hospital in central Gaza City. She trekked there while praying he was alive, Yasmin said. I went in screaming, "Where is my son? Where is Omar?" A doctor carrying a cardboard box approached her. He told me, "Your son is in surgery. This is his leg." Yasmin fainted. After Omar woke from surgery, he felt an absence in the lower half of his body. He told the Electronic Intifada that the first shell had just hit meters from his cousins Hamoud and Mouad, pushing them up into the air. In an instant, he heard the whistle of a second shell before he was thrown to the ground and lost consciousness. When I opened my eyes, I saw my legs covered in blood, Omar said. I tried to pull myself away and crawl, but I fainted again. I woke up to find myself in the hospital. My right leg was amputated. The other was seriously injured. Although Yasmin tried to hide the appalling news, Omar later learned that his cousins, both of them also 13, were killed. I wish I had died with them, he said. I keep thinking about how they are gone. After a week, Omar returned to the tent where his parents wheel him daily to the Artificial Limbs and Polio Center in eastern Gaza City for physiotherapy. The family has appealed on social media and asked doctors about getting him a prosthetic limb. They were told they are not available in Gaza due to the Israeli restrictions on movement in and out of Gaza. I wish I could walk again without crutches, Omar said. I can't sleep at night. I keep thinking about that day and about my life now as an amputee without a prosthetic. Omar is among at least 6,000 amputation cases that require urgent long-term rehabilitation programs, according to the Ministry of Health in Gaza, as of December 2025. Of the 6,000, 25% are children, like Omar. Gaza has the largest number of child amputees worldwide, according to UNRWA, the UN agency for Palestine refugees. Those are excerpts from A Genocide Here, An Amputation There by Ahmed Dremli and Huda Skaik, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and reclamation across Palestine and around the world. Hundreds of runners, some of them barefoot, participated in the first marathon race in Gaza since the start of the genocide in 2023. They ran past enormous mountains of rubble where homes used to be, as well as areas that are slowly returning to life. Reporter Selma Kadoumi captured this clip of the race. She says, quote, "The first marathon in the Gaza Strip kicked off after a 3-year hiatus with around 500 participants. The race started from the entrance of Al Burej refugee camp and continued to the city of Deir el-Balah in the central Gaza Strip, where participants covered a distance of 4 kilometers. That's from Selma Kadoumi in Gaza. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.